staring straight up.
Was there an Adam? Was there any?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. I hope it's beautiful where you are. It's beautiful here, even though it is still raining. We have had so much rain this spring. I hope my tomatoes make it through the season. Knowing that the leaves don't like so much water, I am concerned, but we have had just so much rain, and the garden is just flourishing. It's just amazing. Anyway, I have a great show for all of you today. My guests, I have two guests that will be on with me today. Maria Hoff is the founder of Capella Grazing Project, and Sam Ryerson is the founder of Grass Nomads. And both of them are joining me. I was introduced to them through the New Farmer's Almanac, and I'll tell you more about the New Farmer's Almanac and about my guests in a little bit when they are ready to come on. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in around the news, some take actions that I want you to participate in, and of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So first, the garden, as I said, is just flourishing, and I have so much coming out of it, and I just cannot keep up with it. It's just so much. And I have some great new interns that are really flexible and willing to work in the rain, which right now is really important because it seems like every time I schedule them, it seems to be raining. But we harvested so much stuff on Tuesday, and we packed it up, and I gave big bags to everybody to take home with them, and it was just wonderful. And as many of you know, I've taken on a new job as the farm-to-school coordinator at Glen Cove Public School. And I've been getting lots of comments from people wanting to know how they can participate in a farm-to-school program. And I just want to share that New York State offers these grants. I'm not sure when the deadline is for applying, but every school district, especially if you are in a low economic area or have a certain percentage of students that are on the National School Lunch Program are free and reduced, then you can qualify. So I recommend going to New York State Ag and Markets website, look for Farm to School program, and apply for a grant there. Another thing I want to let you know about is in our school district now, all of the elementary students in the whole district get free lunch, just like all of New York City public schools get free lunch. And so again, if you are in a low economic community, you can apply for the Community Eligibility Provision, stands for CEP. And if you want to participate, the deadline is coming up for that. So I wanted to share that with you. You can adopt a community eligibility program for the 2019 school year. The deadline for enrollment is June 30th, or for submitting the application is June 30th. So you want to check that out. And I have an article on that in my website at iegreen.com under Take Action. And so if you are in a school district in a low economic area, you can apply so that your kids also get free breakfast and lunch. And it's just great. It takes the stigma away from anyone having to be on the free and reduced and making anybody any different than the next person. So that's really a wonderful thing. However, they still have a la carte items, which you do need to pay cash for, and so that still, makes things a little bit different. Our school is also setting up a food pantry for the school district. It will be run out of the high school, and that's a really exciting, exciting project. Some things I want to share with you in the news that are really exciting is New York State. I don't know if the governor actually signed it yesterday. It was supposed to get signed yesterday. The Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. And this is a rewriting of the Climate and Community Protection Act that we've been working for so long, the CCPA, that groups have been working on for years. I only got involved in it this past year. But the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act is the new revision of it. It passed in both houses, and the governor was supposed to sign it into law. And it's really, really exciting. It is set to cut New York State's greenhouse gas emissions by 70%, slash planet warming pollution 85% below 1990 levels by 2050. It's just really exciting. I mean, it's going to be an adjustment for New Yorkers. Our electricity might become more expensive, but they are going to be getting all of our electricity, or the majority of our electricity, 85%, from renewable energies, solar, wind. Very exciting. So I recommend checking out that article as well, because it is groundbreaking. We are really a leader here in New York with this, with the passing of this Climate Protection Act. Also, Slow Food, which is an organization that I've been involved with for so long, just sent out a great little blurb about the Slow Food movement. And it's a global network of local communities. And I just want to read this little blurb to you, because it's so important for us all to be a part of this global food movement, because it is changing the way people eat. It's changing the way people think about food, and it is changing laws to help make our food more transparent and healthier. So Slow Food is a global network of local communities founded in 1989 to prevent the disappearance of local food cultures and traditions and counteract the rise of fast food culture. Since its founding, Slow Food has grown into a global movement involving millions of people in over 160 countries, working to ensure that everyone has access to good, clean, and fair food. Slow Food is the umbrella organization responsible for guiding the entire movement, which reaches millions of people every year. Today, we are the food movement. And in our local region here in New York, we have Slow Food North Shore, Slow Food East End, Slow Food New York City, Slow Food South Shore, and we even have a Slow Food Hofstra, which is part of the Slow Food on Campus campaign. So I invite all of you to join Slow Food, find your local Slow Food movement. There's a big, big Slow Food festival happening out in Denver on July 19th to the 21st called Slow Food Nations. And it's just a great movement, something that I think everyone will want to be a part of. Some things I want to tell you about that are coming up in the New York area. And of course, I like to have on my website a list of ongoing events in our local area. So if you know of any events that you think I should add to my list, please send them my way. On June 23rd, Ellen Kamai, who is also a host here on the Progressive Radio Network, is doing an herbal medicine making class at Restoration Farm from 11 to 3. I have participated in these classes before. They are really great. Ellen is just a wealth of information. She knows so much, and I really recommend checking out that class if you're on Long Island. Slow Food East End is having an Eight Hands Farm Tour and Food Truck Tasting at Eight Hands Farm in Catchogue, and that's from 4:30 on June 27th. And there's a fixed menu tasting of Eight Hands Farm Food Truck following the farm tour. That should be great. Eight Hands Farm raises sustainable lamb. I don't know what else they raise, but I know that we have used their lamb in some of our events. July 13th, Slow Food North Shore is having a coffee meetup at Mongo's, which is a new coffee house in Syosset. And it's going to be a meetup on a Saturday morning from 10 to 12. We are offering unlimited fair trade coffee on the house with homemade baked goods that Slow Food North Shore members will be baking. There will also be items that are for sale, specialty coffees, etc., at a discount. Mitch, the owner of Mongo's, will be giving a talk at 11 about sustainable coffee practices, fair trade practices. He is an expert in coffee roasting, and so that should be really interesting. And you just meet other slow food members in a casual setting. It's a really nice new space. On July 16th, Food Tank, which is a wonderful organization. If you don't know of Food Tank, you should. Danielle Nuremberg heads that up, and it's just a wealth of information. They have summits and talks that they have all across the country, and they're having one in New York on July 16th and another one on August 13th at NYU. So tickets are free, and they can be bought on Eventbrite. And you can find more information about that also on my website or the Food Tank Talk website. Slow Food Nations, I already mentioned to you. That's July 19th to the 22nd out in Denver, Colorado. NOFA New York. NOFA stands for the Northeast Organic Farming Association. Every Northeast state has their own chapter, and the New York chapter is a wonderful organization that I am a member of. We are having a huge gala on August 23rd to support organic food and farmers, as well as human health and the well-being of the planet. And we invite everyone to join us at the New York Climate of Change Gala. And that's on Friday, August 23rd from 7 to 11 at Locust Grove Estate in Poughkeepsie, New York. And this gala will be an evening of inspiring talks, a farm-to-table dinner, open bar, silent and live auctions to support the programming and the policy work that NOFA is doing. We have a great lineup. Organic farmer, actress, and filmmaker Isabella Rossellini will be the gala's featured guest. And Scott Chasky, poet, farmer, and educator at the Peconic Land Trust, will be the master of ceremonies. And tickets are available on the NOFA New York website. Also, NOFA New York has separate chapters, and our local regional chapter on Long Island, we are having a potluck and discussion at the Garden of Eve Farm in Riverhead. And we invite anyone to become a member of NOFA. We are looking to grow our membership. And if you are on Long Island, come join us and meet fellow NOFA members and find out what is going on Long Island with our local farms. Let's talk about ways that NOFA New York can help support our local farmers. Great, great opportunity. And also NOFA, not just New York, but all the NOFAs in the Northeast are having a communal summer conference at Hampshire College in Amherst. And the theme is Nutrition Matters. Soil health builds human health. So if you're available on that weekend, August 9th through 11th, that certainly will be a great, great event. Now I'd like to share with you my recipe before I invite my two guests on who are waiting patiently. This is a Georgian radish green pate. I'm very fortunate to have a very close family member who is from the Republic of Georgia, and she has turned me on to so many wonderful flavors that they cook with. And one is a spice mixture called Kamili Sunili Spice Mix. And you can actually buy that online because it's hard to find. Specialty spice stores have it, but most supermarkets, unless you're in a Georgian area, do not carry it. So you can find it online. But this is a wonderful recipe to use the tops of your radishes. It used to be something that I would just throw away, but not anymore. These are a real delicacy, and this is a great recipe. And I have a few different recipes, variations of this recipe that I've made before. So I steamed the radish greens and measured out 2 cups of steamed radish greens, 1 cup of walnuts, 6 cloves of garlic, 1/2 cup of cilantro, 2 tablespoons olive oil, 1/2 cup of red onion chopped, 1 shallot chopped, 1 stalk of celery chopped, 1/2 teaspoon salt and 1/4 teaspoon pepper, 1 teaspoon of the Kamili Sunili spice mix, 1/2 teaspoon of cardamom, 1/2 teaspoon of cumin, and then 1/4 cup of olive oil. So I first steamed the radish tops, and then I let those cool down, and then I squeezed all the water out of the radish tops because this is all going into a food processor and we're pureeing it, and you don't want it to be too watery. Then I sautéed the onion and the shallots in the 2 tablespoons of olive oil until they were golden and translucent. I added the chopped celery and continued cooking for another 5 minutes. And then all of that went into the food processor with the steamed radish tops. And I pulsed that until it was well blended. Then I added the garlic, the walnuts, and the cilantro, and pulsed that until it was smooth, wiping down the sides as it needed. You really want to make a smooth paste with all of this. I added the spices, the salt and pepper, and mixed it again. And then I slowly drizzled in the olive oil while the food processor was running to emulsify the oil and to really get the texture of the pâté the way I wanted it. And just adjust the spices. Taste it. You can add a little bit more of the Georgian spice, kumili, sunili spice, a little more salt or pepper. You know, adjust it for your flavorings. And that's the beauty of being the chef. You get to adjust it for what you like. You can serve it with tortilla chips, pita chips, crudite, crackers, whatever you like. It's even just great as a little side on a salad. So enjoy it. Let me know how you like it. And give me some feedback. I'd love to hear from everybody. And now it's my pleasure to introduce all of you to my two guests today. As I said earlier, they both have added to the New Farmer's Almanac, which is a wonderful book that's put out by the Greenhorns. And this is the fourth volume of this publication, which is, you know, just a beautiful mix of essays and stories and poems from farmers, ranchers, ecologists, educators, gardeners, researchers, everyone that really cares about the land, our food system, and survival of the natural world. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful collaboration from so many different people. And both Marie Hoff, who's coming on, and Sam Ryerson are authors in this book. And Marie Hoff conceived and operates the Capella Grazing Project, which integrates heritage breed Owestan sheep and landscapes in need of the service of grazing, such as vineyards, orchards, and private property, seeking fire prevention and brush management. And Capella Grazing has since folded in with Marie's next project, which is the Full Circle Wool. And she will tell us more about that. And Sam Ryerson currently manages grazing on two ranches in southern Montana with his partner, Ariel Greenwood. And they are both co-owners of Grass Nomads, which is a grazing company. And they are running some of their own yearling heifers here in Montana, along with 3,000 other yearlings. And he also partners in a company in New Mexico called Triangle P Cattle Company, where they spend the winter. And both of them just have so much to add to this book. And I found it really interesting when I called the publicist of the New Farmer's Almanac asking, who should I interview from the book? They recommended both Marie and Sam. And both of them are ranchers and are dealing with cattle, which is not my specialty. And so I have so much to learn from them. And I'm really excited to ask them some of these questions. So I'm going to start with you, Marie. Are you with me, Marie?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Perfect. So can you just share with us some of your history? How did you get started in this field? Where did you grow up? You know, what was your introduction to this and what drew you to this work?
Yeah, I think I had a pretty non-standard introduction. I've worked with cattle a little bit, but I mainly work with sheep. And I honestly, I had almost no experience with livestock or with grazing or with ecosystems until I was in my late 20s. And I started getting really interested in agriculture. I started going out and working on farms, and I was just drawn to working with animals, to working with livestock, and especially sheep, largely because I was really interested in wool and fiber, and I wasn't really particularly that interested in raising food as a product. I mean, I have a lot of honor and appreciation and respect for people who are raising food. It didn't really seem like the thing for me to do. There were just so many people around me, it seemed like, doing it, that were doing it really well. And I just got really drawn to the fiber aspect and worked with different kinds of sheep. And then in 2013, I had the opportunity to buy my own small flock of sheep. I started out with seven ewes, and I've just kind of been going since then.
Wow. Wow. And so do you actually just harvest the wool from the sheep, or do you also have them slaughtered for meat?
You know, our main product is wool. I don't sell the sheep for meat, largely just because of economic factors. I have a very small flock of sheep. I just have 28 sheep. And really the main source of income is renting out our grazing services. So the sheep that I run are very small. They're the smallest known breed of sheep in the world. But because of that, they don't grow a whole lot of meat. So honestly, if I ever have to cull one, I consider it a waste because I just make so little money on the meat. I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you.
If I get like 15 pounds of meat or something like that, you know, that's like a one-time cash flow from that animal. Whereas for me, you know, when I rent out sheep, it's about $2 per head per day, give or take. In a year, I mean, we don't contract graze every day of the year, but, you know, even if I'm grazing, say, 4 or 5 months out of the year at $2 per day per sheep every year, you know, it's so much more worth it for me to have those sheep alive and eating. So occasionally we do cull an animal if there's some sort of a problem with it, you know, if it's like learn to jump fence or something, and then it's going to start teaching all the other sheep to jump fences, and then they're vulnerable to predators, and they'll all get killed or something like that. You know, that would be a reason why we might cull a sheep, and we don't really sell it, just eat it or give it to family or mm-hmm. something like that. So we're a bit unconventional in that way, in that we really are focused much more on the service that the animals provide, and then there's a little bit of fiber as well that gets sold.
Uh-huh. And just give my listeners a little background on what the service is. What mm-hmm. you rent out your sheep for grazing services mm-hmm. to manage people's land to keep the grass down, et cetera?
Yeah. So they're often used in several different contexts, I would say. Sometimes they're used in more sort of agricultural contexts where they will be essentially just working for weed abatement. You know, they'll go out to a vineyard and they will eat either the weeds or the cover crop down, or they'll go out to a farm of some other sort that, you know, that's maybe like growing vegetables or something, and they'll eat down the cover crop, or in an orchard they might, you know, graze down they'll both graze down the weeds that might be growing in the orchard, and then also the shoots, the suckers that come mm-hmm. out. And so that actually saves quite a bit of manual labor on the part of those farmers. And then also they're used for fire prevention by doing fine fuel load reduction. So they'll go out to areas and they will eat down the different kinds of grasses and some of the shrubbery and some of the leaves and things like that that would ordinarily just sort of turn into dry tinder in the fall. In California, we're a very Mediterranean climate, and so it rains really typically only very specific times of the year. So it'll rain during the winter and the spring, and then around May or June, it just stops raining altogether. And it's really unusual that there's any rain past June up until, say, like October. So you have a lot of fresh green vegetation that grows up during the spring that then something needs to happen to it before it gets too hot and windy in the late summer so that it's not a fire hazard.
Fire hazard.
So we
reduced
fuel
and
load.
How many? How much acreage does one sheep eat through? Like if a farmer was to hire your services, one sheep can cover how much property?
You know, I've never calculated in that way. The thing with herd animals, with grazing animals, is that everything is relative. So they're very social creatures, and they eat in very social patterns, socially organized patterns, maybe. So if you had just one sheep that was in a given area, say in 1 acre, that sheep would, well, first of all, it would be one sheep. It would be by itself, and so it would be very, very nervous and panicky because sheep do not like to be by themselves. So it might not even eat anything because it would be so stressed out.
Oh, no, so sad. Uh-huh.
If you had, say, like 3 sheep together, you know, like they would eat in a different way than if you had, say, 10 sheep or 40 sheep in that same 1 acre. They uh-huh. have just different cues that they work off of. So right now, the grazing flock that I send out is very small. It's about 13 animals. And so I just quote it based on what I think those 13 animals can do, as opposed to like a sort of a set rate.
Right. And so those 13 animals, what would you rent them out for? Like, I mean, or how much property would you think that they could eat through in a day or two?
Yeah, well, that also really depends on the vegetation and the time of year, the growth stage of the various plants. One of the perks to this breed that I raise, the Wasson sheep, is that they are this very old, old breed, and so they will eat a pretty high diversity of plants. They'll eat grasses and forbs like any sheep will, but then they also do a really good job with a lot of types of shrubbery like poison oak and blackberry and broom, like Scotch broom, plants like that that sometimes more domesticated sheep aren't really suited to eat. But they'll eat through all of that. So it just kind of depends if that vegetation, if it's more grass and forbs or if it's more shrubs, mm-hmm. if it's really dry or if it's fresh and green.
So I guess it's really very individual, and each farmer that hires your sheep or hires your company really has to give it a try and see what it does, right? I mean, there's no set anything. It's really...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, uh-huh. certainly there's no set anything. But typically I'll come out and I'll do a site visit beforehand, and I'll make an estimate and I'll give them a quote about how much time I think it's going to take for them to do what, and then we go from there.
Cool. That sounds great. Okay, Marie, I'm going to have you hold for a minute, and I want to get to Sam. Sam, are you with me?
Yeah. Hi, Bovani.
Hi, Sam. Welcome. So you also have a very interesting background. I mean, you grew up here on the East Coast in Massachusetts, and now you're like a modern-day cowboy. How did that happen? How did you get involved in grazing and you know, having that life of a cowboy?
That's a long story. But I can tell you. I grew up in Massachusetts. I grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I studied architecture in college. I moved out to Montana as I was finishing college to start working on a house for my mother, who just bought a little 12-acre piece of land here outside of Red Lodge, Montana. Started working on that. I was camping out in a teepee. Bought myself a horse. I'd ridden a bit when I was younger, and wound up helping out on some ranches nearby part-time, and found that I really enjoyed the work and I seemed capable, and wound up making that my full-time occupation and never went back.
Uh-huh. So can you just share with my listeners what a typical day in your world looks like?
There really is no typical day for us. Very diverse. There's a lot of work outside, moving cattle pretty frequently, especially this time of the year. The grass is growing really fast, and we try to manage cattle in order to create the healthiest grasslands that we can to take care of the land and to get the cattle to perform and gain weight as well and as quickly as possible and to make the best kind of beef that we can.
Uh-huh.
So in order to take really good, careful care of the grass, graze it, and then give it a chance to grow back, which means cattle pretty frequently across the land according to a grazing plan from one pasture to the next, and then sometimes rotating back across those pastures later in the season after the grass has had a chance to recover and grow and make a seed.
You write about holistic planned grazing and mindful stockmanship. Can you explain what those are and what you mean by that?
Yeah. Holistic planned grazing is a concept that's been around for quite a while. The holistic term was coined by a man named Alan Savory, who's originally from Africa, and put together a whole philosophy of holistic management, which is a whole philosophy and framework for decision making, not only for grazing planning, but it applies specifically to ranch management and grazing planning. And it's something we practice where we consider the whole under our management when we're planning our grazing strategy. We're not just planning for grass or just for cattle performance or just profit or just our own quality of life, but we consider all of these things and balance our priorities, considering the whole as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to plan for what you might call triple bottom line returns, not just financial profit, but financial, social, human, and ecological returns. And balancing those against each other and compromising as we need to, but trying to manage for the good of the whole all the time. And practically speaking, holistic planned grazing usually means what I was just talking about, careful planning to maximize plant recovery, which means fairly intensively managed groups of cattle moved frequently across the land.
Mm-hmm. And are these cattle all being raised as grass-fed beef, or who owns the cattle? Do you own the cattle? Does the rancher own the cattle? And is this cattle being raised as grass-fed beef?
Yeah, that's a good question. Ariel and I own some of the cattle that we're managing now. Our arrangement with our partner here is that we take care of his cattle. They're owned by his company, Cayuse Livestock, based here in Montana, and we're managing a couple of ranches for them, and as part of our compensation, we get to run some of our own cattle. And these are all yearling cattle. They're steers and heifers. They're about a year to year and a half old at this point. And they were all raised locally. They grew up with their mothers all on grass the previous summer, first 9 months of their lives or so. Then they were weaned last fall. Some of them were fed in feed yards on silage and hay and a little bit of grain over the winter. A lot of them were fed outside on hay all winter because cattle need feed like that in Montana in the winter. The ground's all covered up with snow, and they can't get by on grass alone, usually. And then in early May, we turn them back out on grass. So they're all on grass right now. Most of these cattle will be sold in the fall into feed yards in Colorado or Nebraska or Idaho, maybe. And they'll be finished there on grain for the last few months of their lives before they're slaughtered.
Mm-hmm. So they're not the they really get sold off to like factory farms you're talking about. They're not the grass fed beef that, you know, that farmers do, that they are, you know, able to get top dollar for, and that are really you know, trying to change the way cattle being grown.
Sure. Most of these cattle will go to large feed yards where they'll be sold into the commodity market. We're part of another company in New Mexico where we do things a little bit differently, and Ariel and I have both had our own small grass-fed enterprises in the past where we finished cattle on grass and sold them directly to consumers. We're not mm-hmm. set up here right now. We're really prioritizing rangeland management and focusing on that. And in order to do that on the scale that we want, and in order to manage more land the way we want, we're working with a more commercial model where the cattle are going into the commodity market.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to take a couple minute break right now. And when we come back, I want to ask both of you about how your practices are affecting our ecosystem and climate change. So don't go anywhere, everyone who's listening. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green. I'm talking with Marie Hoff from Marie Hoff and Sam Ryerson. And we'll be right back.
Do you want to know the latest news or upcoming events? Follow us at Twitter at @PRN_radio or click the Twitter icon on our homepage. You can also friend us on Facebook. Just search Progressive Radio Network. Always new and up to date. The Progressive Radio Network, your home for thoughtful and informative information.
Hi, this is Frankie Boyer. Join me Sunday afternoons at 2 o'clock right here on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, for Cannabis Talk A to Z, an educational odyssey. The series navigates the landscape of the dynamic cannabis industry, from science-driven and published research on the health benefits of this dietary phytocannabinoid, the most prolific array of renewable resource products. Tune in on Sundays at 2 o'clock. Cannabis Talk A to Z.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
I'm Celia Farber.
And I'm Christina Borgeson. We're the hosts of a brand new show, The Whistleblower Newsroom, right here on PRN. This is a show for and about whistleblowers. And by us, two investigative reporters brutally hammered for uncovering cover-ups and media corruption.
This show is for whistleblowers
who stand up for the truth and face devastating consequences, who document facts and risk their lives and livelihoods to bring those facts to the public.
They come from all walks of life, government, science, journalism, academia, and many other fields. They'll be safe, warm, and welcome here on the Whistleblower Newsroom every Friday morning, 10 a.m., right here on PRN.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Marie Hoff from the Capella Grazing Project and Full Circle Wool, and Sam Ryerson from Grass Nomads. and they are both guests. They both are contributors to the New Farmer's Almanac, and we were just getting ready to talk about how their practices affect climate change. So, Marie, I'm going to start with you. Can you talk about the ecosystem services that you provide, and you know, what does that entail, and your philosophy behind that?
Yeah. So what we do is we go into systems that would otherwise be using essentially some sort of process would be happening wherein carbon and different kinds of gases would be going up into the atmosphere, which is not where we want carbon to go in terms of climate. We have way too much carbon up in the air, not nearly enough down in the soil. So essentially when you are renting a sheep from me or any kind of livestock from anybody in order to do vegetation management, what you're doing is you are using a process that moves the carbon that's in that vegetation out. Instead of it going up into the atmosphere, you're moving it back down into the soil, essentially via the animal's rumen. So that vegetation would otherwise be mowed, or it would have herbicide applied to it, or just simply nothing would happen to it, and it would slowly dry up and die and decay over time. Or fire could come in, either a prescribed fire or a non-prescribed fire. All those methods, essentially, they move carbon up into the atmosphere from the vegetation, you know, with, you know, your sort of like general fossil fuel burning mower, tractor, you know, you're burning a lot of fuel in order to move that vegetation onto the ground. And then once it's on the ground, it's still, you know, it's still there. It's just going to dry up and oxidize. Same thing happens essentially with herbicides, where if you apply it, you haven't really gotten rid of the biomass. You've just, you know, you've killed it and it's dry and it's oxidizing up into the atmosphere. If nothing happens to it, basically the same thing happens in a longer period of time, that it just dies and dries out and oxidizes. Or if a fire comes through, a fire is the major release of carbon back up into the atmosphere. But with livestock, you're actually taking that carbon and you're cycling it through that animal's rumen, which is basically like this sort of optimal fermentation chamber, because it goes through and it gets digested. So it literally changes form. It's not just, you know, dead dry matter that's on the ground. It goes through the animal's stomach and is digested and has all kinds of, you know, probiotics added to it, and it comes back out the back end as either pellets or, you know, some sort of like very easily biodegradable, assimilatable carbon source for the soil, which if you are grazing in a manner that is healthy and sustainable and the animals are moving through at a relatively rapid pace, so they aren't overgrazing, but they're rather essentially just pruning, then you don't really have the same kind of problem with emissions from livestock that you might have in a sort of a more concentrated setting, because they're in their natural ecosystem, and so there are all these kinds of ecosystem processes that are taking care of those kinds of gases like methane or things like that. In a healthy ecosystem, there are different kinds of microbes in the soil. There are methanotrophs. There are different kinds of arthropods. There's dung beetles, things that are taking that, breaking it down. And I think there's a pet peeve of mine is that there's this concept that just any livestock in general is releasing methane up into the atmosphere and contributing to climate change. And if you look at the science, that's not true. It really depends on how the animal is being raised and if it's in a natural and a healthy setting. It actually is not. It's drawing more carbon down into the soil by putting fertility into the soil, and that fertility then feeds more plants. So the grasses that come back the following year are actually healthier. They have stronger roots, and just through the stronger photosynthetic processes are themselves drawing down more carbon. So when you're using grazing animals, you're really using them as a tool, and you can use that tool properly or improperly.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. That's, you know, pretty clear. And I, you know, have come to realize that as well. You know, even though, you know, a lot of my following, you know, is more plant-based, those that do choose to eat meat are, you know, trying to make better choices as to meat that they eat. And, you know, I have interviewed a gentleman from Soil for Climate, you know, who's talking about trying to get more cattle grazing out on the land and how that can really change our landscape and really help mitigate climate change just by what you're talking about, sequestering the carbon from the atmosphere into the soil. Mm-hmm. And so, Sam, this next question's for you, because I know you're very involved with this other organization called Quivira Coalition. That's all about education, innovation, restoration, and you're putting a lot of those ideas into practice. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Quivira Coalition is a nonprofit based in Santa Fe, New Mexico. At a time when there was a really heated conflict between ranchers and environmentalists, over cattle grazing on federal lands, especially in the Southwest, when environmentalists were trying to get cattle off the land, they thought the land was being really degraded by grazing, and ranchers were fighting to maintain their livelihoods and protect what they saw as their rights to run their ranches, which included federal land. So out of that conflict came a group of environmentalists and ranchers who tried to find common ground and work together for the good of the land, which they realized was
Are you still there, or am I losing you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Sam, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I hear you now. Can you say what you just said again, the last bit, because I lost you.
Oh, yeah. Quivira has evolved a lot. One of their main programs now is called the New Agrarian Program. It's an apprenticeship for beginning farmers or ranchers. It's a program that about 10 years ago, I was one of the first apprentices in that program on a ranch in southern Colorado, grass-fed, grass-finished, holistically planned, organic cattle ranch. Through that program and went into a management position on a ranch in New Mexico. Programs expanded a lot over the years. We now have a director and several mentor ranches up in Montana. Our ranch in New Mexico has our own mentorship program there now. We've taken apprentices there the last two summers.
Are you there? Hello? Sam, you're going in and out.
Can you hear me now?
You there? I can hear you, yep.
Yeah, yep. I'm really excited about the apprenticeship program that Quivira is working on. in addition to the ongoing efforts in land stewardship.
And so through this organization, how are you trying to address the message about what Marie was just talking about the benefits of cattle grazing and how that can be used to help mitigate climate change?
Well, that's a good question. I really like Marie's answer on the science. I'm less informed on the science of it. But our approach is to raise food, to raise the best quality beef that we can, to take care of rangelands in the best way that we can, and support our communities at the same time, and keep a place for people on the land.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then I think I have time for one more question for each of you. So, Marie, can you share with us some of the exciting things you're looking forward to for the future with your work and your farm?
Yeah, I think there are a number of things that are coming up that we're pretty excited about. So I rent my sheep out to different places, but then I also am based off of a small 2-acre property that we've only been on for 2 years, so we haven't really gotten a lot of experience with farming it. I've mostly just kind of been experimenting. I really don't come from a crop land kind of background. My experience really mostly is with grazing animals and just with grazing land as opposed to farming it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sort of teaching myself as I go how to do it. But we just got a grant from the state of California through the Healthy Soils Program, which we're pretty excited about. And that grant is going to enable us to do a lot of really fun things, like we're going to plant a native hedgerow along one of our borders, and that hedgerow will both draw carbon down, and it will also provide habitat for different kinds of wildlife, for different kinds of birds. And it'll also be a source of different kinds of native plants that we can use for dye plants, for medicinal purposes, maybe even some that will be a food source. We're going to be able to put in a small fruit orchard, and so we will effectively be doing a silvopasture, which silvopasture is basically just having trees and pasture land together in the same place. So you're grazing animals on the grass that grows between the different trees in the orchard. We'll also be doing some compost application and some range planting. Range planting is basically planting starts of different native grasses in, and hopefully that all of those practices will increase our carbon drawdown, and as well they'll increase our productivity, so we'll get more food and fiber out of a very small area. And I'm also looking forward to continuing my work with Full Circle Wool, which is purchasing larger quantities of wool from different neighboring ranches in pretty much within my Northern California area, and making that into product, things like batting,
mm-hmm.
Felt. I make a product that's wool sponges. So those are, sponges that are undyed, and they're made of wool, which is naturally antimicrobial and antifungal, so they don't get smelly or gross. And they're compostable. So they're a really good source for being able to do your dishes and, not be using those kind of, like, crappy, smelly, aesthetic
uh-huh.
sponges.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. And so, Sam, can you share with us what you have? Thank you, Marie. Sam, can you share with us what you're looking forward to, what you have coming up?
Oh, well, I'm just looking forward to the summer season here in Montana. We've had a really cool, wet spring. We had a foot of snow on the ground a few weeks ago, and it's just incredible to see the grass grow this time of year here. There's so much life, and I really like seeing the way the land responds to our management of it, the way pastures come to life after they've been grazed so vigorously. It seems like the grass and all the wildlife, too, respond.
Get ready for it.
To our grazing. And otherwise, I'd like to mention a little project that Ariella and I have been working on along the lines of the New Farmer's Almanac, which you mentioned earlier that I wrote for a little bit. We just started a new online literary journal for art and writing about rangelands and celebrating rangelands with work by people on rangelands from all over the world. It's called Contraviento. And we have a website with all our stuff online at contravientojournal.org.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I'll share that on my website, too. And Maria, I'll also share your contact information on my website, because we are just about out of time. But I want to thank you both so much for joining me. Your work is fascinating, and as I said, it's so different than what I do, and it's really unfamiliar, and so I learned so much from both of you, and reading about your work prior to this interview was really fascinating, and so I wish you both the best of luck. Have a great summer, and those of you listening, thank you so much for joining us. I will post all of their contact information and links to their work so you can read more about them on my website at iegreen.com. And so, everyone, have a great rest of the week, and I will speak to you, not next week, the week after. Next week I'll be away, but I have a great show planned anyway, so check it out. Have a great week, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now. I'm a